Brahmanam Shraya Brahmanam Pasyami Brahmanam Sri Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, personally descends into this universe from the spiritual kingdom to teach conditioned souls about the value of spiritual life, tries to induce them to surrender unto him. Similarly, the Brahmanas do the same thing. After assimilating the Vedic instructions, they assist the Lord in his endeavor to deliver conditioned souls. The Brahmanas are very dear to the Supreme Lord due to their high sattva guna qualities, and they also engage in welfare activities for all conditioned souls. As there is no respect for Brahmanas, as far as I am concerned, no one is equal or superior to the Brahmanas in this world. I do not find anyone comparable to them. When people know my motive after performing rituals according to Vedic principles, they offer food to me with faith and love through the mouth of a Brahmana. When food is thus offered unto me, I eat it with full satisfaction. Indeed, I derive more pleasure from food offered in that way than from the food offered in the sacrificial fire. So, as the previous verse also stated, Rishabhadev here is praising the Brahmana for two reasons. One, because in the society the king has to follow the Brahmanas. And of course Bharat is appointing Bharat as the king, so he should be respectful to the Brahmanas at all times. So therefore Rishabhadev praises the Brahmanas. So in this verse he gives the reason why is that the Lord is affectionate to the Brahmanas, and after sacrifice, which is also worship of the Lord, there is an injunction that one should feed the Brahmanas. So here Rishabhadev says, I am pleased by this, and when they eat, when the Brahmanas eat, then I also eat. So just as the sacrifice is meant to satisfy the Lord, that is, offering grains and ghee into the fire is a medium of satisfying the Lord. So even better than that is to serve the Brahmanas after the sacrifice by giving them food. And here Rishabhadev says that I take that, I accept that food that the Brahmanas eat, and I'm very satisfied with that. So this shows the respect that the Supreme Lord gives to the Brahmana more than even to the sacrifice itself. Why does he respect the Brahmana more than, let's say, the Kshatriya or the Vaishya or the Sudra? Is because of his particular qualities, which are mentioned in the next verse. So similar qualities are also mentioned in Bhagavad Gita. Among them, sense control, mind control, and following the Vedas, etc. So the qualities of the Brahmana are there. So what are the qualities? These are manifestations of sattva guna. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, I prefer sattva guna to tamaguna, rajaguna, superior. So in that sense, yes, the Lord prefers that. And sattva guna is a medium by which one can begin to understand spiritual life. So it is better than rajaguna or tamaguna. So from the normal social point of view, the persons in sattva guna should be offered more respect. So the brahmanas are dominantly sattva guna nature, and therefore they are given respect in the society. Why? Because they will act as the spiritual guides. As I said, sattva guna qualifies one to understand the difference between matter and spirit and to begin spiritual life. So in the society, though the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas and the Brahmanas can study the Vedas, usually it is the Brahmana who concentrates on studying the Vedas and understanding them, and then teaching it to others. So the Brahmana has the function in society of communicating the meaning of the Vedas to the population and establishing the principles of the Vedas for everyone, even to the Kshatriya. So this gives a scriptural basis to the society and to the government. The king must follow the Brahmanas, and the Brahmanas should give advice according to the scripture. So there's always a relation to scripture in the running of the country. So therefore the Brahmana is respected. From another point of view, of course, we know that sattva guna is also a material guna, and it is also binding to the material world. So it's not an absolute praise that is given here, because it is only a relative praise. The Brahmana is the sattva guna person, sattva guna is the better guna, and therefore the Supreme Lord praises it. So we know, of course, that beyond sattva guna we have spiritual world. This is nirguna, it is beyond the gunas. So that is actually superior. And therefore the processes of jnana, yoga, and bhakti are considered superior to karma yoga. Because karma yoga only puts you up to sattva guna. So, though sattva guna is praised here, we should also understand that that higher than this is the state beyond the gunas. So that is why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Nistrai Gunya Bhava Arjuna, you should be beyond the gunas, even beyond sattva guna. You should be beyond the brahmana. So therefore, the praise of the brahmana is good within society, but from spiritual perspective, actually, we have to go beyond that. But the sattva guna and the brahmana acts as kind of a bridge between material life and spiritual life, because sattva guna is the mode in which one can understand the difference between matter and spirit. So in that way it's praised. So what is beyond the gunas is, of course, the spiritual world, the Supreme Lord, and Paramatma, Bhagavan, Brahman. These are all beyond the material world. So this actually is the goal of the human being, to get beyond the gunas, beyond sattva guna. So therefore, from the spiritual point of view, we actually have to go beyond Brahmanism and whatever, and get to the level of devotional life. Of course, if one is a Brahmana, one can also practice spiritual life, because one can understand the difference between matter and spirit. So one is qualified for jnana, at least. One is not necessarily qualified for being a Vaishnava, because sattva guna does not create a Vaishnava. So the strange thing about bhakti is that it can appear in anybody. It could be in sattva guna, it could be in tamo guna, but bhakti can manifest anywhere. So sattva guna is not a cause of bhakti. It can be kind of indirectly, we can say, a contributing factor on one level, in that by following principles, controlling the senses, etc., this is favorable to bhakti itself. But the real bhakti arises from faith, and faith arises simply by association with devotees and not by gunas. So the devotees are the cause, and they may give mercy to someone in tamoguna as well, sattva guna. So in this way, anyone can become qualified for bhakti. And if one is practicing jnana in sattva guna, this may act unfavorably, because once one becomes fixed for liberation, one may not be attracted to bhakti, and therefore less liable to get mercy of devotees. So therefore we can never say that sattva guna is the cause of bhakti. It is certainly favorable in many respects. So the process of bhakti is actually beyond sattva guna, whereas jnana and yoga are actually within sattva guna themselves. So if we want to get free from bondage, then we actually have to practice bhakti rather than the other processes. For people in the material world, Krishna gives relative instructions. So he tells Arjuna, Bhagavad Gita, you should do karma yoga. You should not give up your duty as a kshatriya. So there he's telling him, you stay in the gunas. You stay in rajagun, sattva-gun. Don't go beyond that. But again, he says, nistra-gunya-bhava, Arjuna, all you rise above the gunas. So he gives two instructions. One is you stay in the gunas and act according to your nature, that is varnashram, karma yoga. And the other is rise above the gunas, get beyond the gunas. So for that we have to practice bhakti. So, which is a superior instruction? If we see the Bhagavad Gita, finally bhakti yoga is the instruction, not karma yoga. So we should not be bewildered by the different instructions that Krishna himself gives, or here that Rishabhadev gives. They give absolute instruction, they give relative instructions. And we have to figure out what is the absolute instruction, that's the superior instruction. So here Rishabhadev is actually giving these instructions because of the situation where he has Bharat becoming the king, some of his sons becoming sages and sattva-gun, and some becoming other rulers also, other parts of the Bhumandala. So he's giving instructions to Kshatriyas and to Brahminical people, and upholding the Varnashram system, which is the duty of the king. So therefore it's apt that he gives such instructions. Why, we can ask, why we'll find in the Bhagavatam that we get this emphasis upon the rulership of the kings, etc., from Manu afterwards. And the reason is that the majority of the population needs to maintain itself. See, any civilization needs the process of maintenance. So they need food, and they need a system of government, and law and order, and protection, etc. So, therefore, the Lord supplies that through Manu and his descendants, the kings. And the system they set up is called the Varnashram system. So this is a system for population in general to keep peace and keep everybody, supply them with enough food, etc., to keep them materially satisfied. At the same time, restricting them to some degree in terms of sense enjoyment, etc. So this creates a stable society. And that stable society is favorable for development of spiritual life and devotion. Of course, we'll see that even if there is not a stable society, still bhakti can function. And of course we'll see that sometimes the devotees are completely are detached from the society anyway, so it doesn't matter what's happening in society. They stay by themselves, so they don't have to communicate with that society, so it doesn't matter what type of society it is. But in general, if we have a favorable society, then it is easier for the population in general to practice bhakti. So a varnashramic society is more favorable than an asuric society for practicing bhakti. There's acceptance of the Supreme Lord rather than persecution of devotees and rejection of the Supreme Lord. So in a varnashramic society, there's acceptance of the Supreme Lord and recognition of the process of bhakti and spiritual life, etc. So that is in itself is favorable. And one gets a peaceful surrounding, and one is enabled to support oneself nicely. One can live and survive, materially speaking, in order that one can practice bhakti. So these are the favorable aspects of that varnashram system. The unfavorable aspect is that if we're attached to it, then we're subject to bondage. Because it is operating within the gunas. So therefore, if we become too attached to it, then we're stuck in the material gunas. The other problem is that it's a gradual process of advancement. So therefore, if you're at the bottom of the social scale, that is a sudra, you have to go through many, many lifetimes before you advance. So the jiva will take many births as a sudra, then gradually elevate to a vaishya, then a kshatriya, then a brahmin. So it takes a very slow process of advancement in that system, as far as going up to sattva-guna. So that is the other aspect that has a negative aspect. The third aspect is that it has to be instituted on on a large scale. That is, the Varnashram system is for a whole society. So therefore you need all the different categories of people with the rules, and you need a king there or a government to enforce all the rules. So it needs a big infrastructure, etc., to make it operate properly. Huh? Because if some of the people follow, some don't follow, you get a little bit confusion. So everybody has to follow the same system. So therefore, it requires a big infrastructure and a head of government, etc., to institute properly in order for it to be effective. So that's another drawback. So unfortunately, in Kali Yuga, the system is falling apart. So that's a major flaw. And for that reason, as well as the idea that in Kali Yuga everybody is very lazy, unintelligent, etc., short-lived, therefore they will not advance very nicely in the system at all, because it is not operating properly, for one, and secondly, people are short-lived, etc., and they can't follow properly anyway. So, for that reason, Krishna does not recommend it in Bhagavad Gita as the Yuga Dharma and the practical method for everybody to follow. So rather than follow this gradual method, he simply says, you practice bhakti, that's all. So what is the plus point of bhakti? We don't need a whole social system to operate. But individuals can do it no matter what's happening around them. Second, the qualification does not depend upon gradual elevation of the gunas, which is what happens in karma yoga. It's independent of that. It depends only on mercy of devotees. And it is a quicker process. So one can advance very, very quickly through the process of bhakti within one's short lifespan. So in this way, there are some advantages to the process of bhakti. So the negative aspects of the Varnashram system are not there in the process of bhakti. And of course the positive aspects are that it is beyond the gunas, whereas Varnashram is in the gunas. And if, then after you get to the Varnashram, you have to get out of the Varnashram system. Bhakti is by nature beyond the gunas, so therefore we don't have to switch after bhakti, we don't have to do something else. We just continue bhakti in a sadhana state and to a prema state. So there's no necessity of learning anything else. It is a complete system in itself. And, of course, since it is complete, all realizations contained within it. So therefore, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan are within realization. Whereas in Varnashram system, we can maybe understand the Lord, and then we go to Jnana, and we end up with Brahman only. Or with Yoga, we end up with Paramatma. So we get complete realization of the Lord in with Bhakti Yoga. So, therefore, Bhakti Yoga is the recommended process nowadays. Nevertheless, throughout the day of Brahma, we have a rotation of yugas, such as Treta, Dwarpa, Kali. So in Kali Yuga, this is the time where the whole system gets destroyed. In the other yugas, yes, it is possible to follow Karma Yoga and Jnana and Astanga Yoga. Because the people are more qualified, longer lifespan, more sense control, Varnashram system intact, etc. So it is easier to follow those systems. Kali Yuga, no. So therefore, Krishna recommends the process of Bhakti Yoga over the other processes.
Thank you. The disturbance of the common devotees, common people, they are not glorified in Bhagavad. Most of the kings and the princes, they take the examples and they are perfect.
Yeah, obviously the population in general, if it is not Kali Yuga, the population itself is also highly qualified. And therefore they can follow processes in Sakya Yuga like meditation. That's the Yuga Dharma, meditation. So everybody's highly qualified with sense control, mind control, etc., that they can automatically meditate without any problem. So everybody is qualified. But in the Bhagavatam, of course, one of the topics is Manvantara. We discuss the Manus and their descendants. So that is why we'll find this whole discussion not only in Bhagavatam, but in the Vishnu Purana and other Puranas as well. That discussion will be there. So it points out the lines of the kings, because they are the ones that establish that system. It's not just anybody gets elected or you choose anyone to be. No, it is selected by hereditary right. And we'll see even the Pandavas. Why do they have to fight? Because this is a matter of hereditary rule. They should have the throne, not the sons of Dhritarashtra, because he wasn't qualified by hereditary right for the throne. So therefore, his son should not control. So it's all based on hereditary right, actually. Who has the right? And of course, the other thing is qualification. They were also properly qualified. The Pandavas were qualified, and the sons of Dhritarashtra weren't. Anyway, the line is, of the kings is emphasized to show that that system needs highly qualified people as leaders. And they're actually considered viputis of the Lord, that is, empowered by the Lord. The descendants of Manu are empowered by the Lord. So they're not ordinary living entities.
Lord Chaitanya also, they appear as kings.
Yeah, of course they have exceptions, like Narayan or a few other ones, Dattatreya, Hamsa, Mohini Avatar, etc. Some of them do, some of them don't. Of course the famous one is Rama. Here we have Rishabhadev, we have Krishna, Parsaram, I suppose you could say, Prithu, Kalki, but others of course are not particularly kings like Narsimhadev or Matsya or Burma, whatever. And some are sages, like Kapila. They're sages, they don't act as kings at all. Or of course Narayan and others as well.
Maharaj,
Maharaj
said that praising the Brahma is a little but actually the Vaishnavas are superior to Brahmanas.
Yeah.
So then why a Vaishnava should take
Brahmanin? Well, actually that's probably not a proper name, because as such, the Brahminical aspect was only introduced by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And before that there was no Brahminical initiation as such, only the Vaishnava initiation. So what we're taking is two initiations, a Brahminical and a Vaishnava initiation. The important one is the Vaishnava initiation. That qualifies you for everything, and therefore you're automatically Brahminical. So you get the Brahminical initiation as well. But it's not necessary in one sense. That was usually done separately, whatever you were. That was done separately when you were a child, you get your initiation or whatever. And then you become a Vaishnava later on. That's where Chaitanya, he took his Upanayana when he was 5 years old, and then he took his Vaishnava initiation in Gaya later on. So they were separate, they weren't connected together at all. The Bhaktisiddhanta connected the two things together only to defeat the argument of others that said that the Vaishnava is inferior to the Brahmana. So he said the opposite. No, the Vaishnava is superior to the Brahmana. And therefore whatever the Brahmana can do, the Vaishnava can also do. So therefore when they become Vaishnavas, he also gave them the Upanayana. So they're qualified as Brahmana. So it's a secondary aspect. It's not actually that we're becoming Brahmanas or becoming Vaishnavas. Secondarily, we automatically have the qualification of a Brahman, whatever they have. But it actually was superior to that.
Maharaj, before Bhaktisiddhanta did Bhaktisiddhanta, Vaishnava initiation was given, so which means Vaishnava Gayatri?
Yes, all right. Nothing to do with Upanayana, nothing to do with Vedic culture, nothing. That was done separately by their family. They would get their Upanayana when they were children.
So possibly one is how they would chant correctly, because not everybody will be, not all Vaishnavas may be from the upper caste.
There
may be some from the
lower. So the chant Vaishnava. No, if you're a Vaishya Kshatriya, also you get Upanayana.
I'm saying maybe probably lower caste.
Then you wouldn't. You would just chant the Vaishnava mantras. See, the only thing, the Brahminical, is the Brahminical mantra, or Ashna Brahminical, is for all the Gayatri, the Brahma Gayatri from the Vedas. That one is Vedic, that's Upanayana.
Yeah.
finally organize something in the mood of things beyond the mood, or is still
he does both. He follows the order of Krishna and he fights, which is, and of course, fighting was the aim. One of the aims of Krishna was to persuade Arjuna to fight because he didn't want to fight the battle. So that he gives all sorts of reasons why you should act as a kshatriya and do your duty, and if you do your duty, then you go to Svargaloka, and all these sort of reasons he's giving, which are actually false reasons ultimately, because it's all material. But you should have fame and whatever, and you shouldn't be dishonorable and whatever, and dishonor is worse than death, all these type of reasons which are material are given. He gives to encourage him to fight. But that, of course, is only the pretext of the whole Bhagavad Gita to explain something much greater than that. So, after all the instructions, of course, then Krishna says, you simply surrender unto me. And Arjuna agrees to do that. But because it is the will of Krishna that he fight, he also fights. So that's part of the surrender also, because that was the will of the Lord at that time. So his fighting is not actually simply because it is following Dharma, it's actually because he's pleasing Krishna, which is an aspect of bhakti.
Sometimes, Maharaj, when we are trying to bring some people to the mode of Guru Bhakti, and they are in mode of Guru, so they start to practice, but they have their own concocted ideas also. So at that point of time, it's generally advised to be detached from the results, like, irrespective of whether the person is able to come up or not. So it's our duty to just preach. So how can a person be not affected by the suffering of the other person who is still in that mode, even if he has got consciousness, consciousness of moods and other things? How can a person be detached from that? Or a Vaishnava should not be detached from this, be praying for others who are not able to come to that mode. What should be the right
path? Well, to a certain degree we have to be compassionate at the same time. We also have to understand the will of the Lord and the individual nature of the jiva. So therefore, we cannot expect perfect results in the material world. So we can do our best, but then we have to be a little detached from the result, because individuals are individuals and we cannot over-expect them to do things that they may not be capable of doing or whatever. But all we can do is do as much as we can, leave the rest up to the mercy of Krishna or whatever.
What is the components of compassion? Like, what should we do to be more compassionate?
Oh, we can. It depends on the situation. The idea, of course, is that we understand what the highest truth is, and we try to communicate that to the best of our ability. This is the best for you. This is the best process, etc. If they can't accept it, then that's like preaching to the faithless. So we can't force them into that position of, you know, making them accept something, and then it becomes offensive on our part. So we have to simply see how much they're capable of taking, and at that point, then we have to wait and see. Maybe they'll change later on. So we can give association in the form of letting them hear the name of Krishna and giving them prasadam, etc. That much we can do. But until they get faith, then it is, we have to be very careful. Otherwise, we'll commit the ninth aparad.
Vaishnavas are not concerned with what is happening in the society, but if the mood is of preaching, then I guess they have to be very sensitive to in terms of what's happening in the society.
To some degree. To some degree we have to know something, otherwise it helps, obviously.
To keep it relevant to the current context.
Yeah. One has to communicate.
Maharaj, there is something, this yoga ladder, karma yoga, dhyan, and ashtanga, and then at the same time, it is unfavorable also. You said
because it's slow process, and one requires the next one, then you have to keep changing processes.
So it is unfavorable because one, following the process, one may become attached to that particular process.
Can also, yeah. That is why Narada Muni condemned Veda Vyas for recommending gradual advancement by worshipping different devatas and different gunas. They won't advance, so simply be attached, and they won't go to the next stage.
What are these statements glorifying the Brahmanas? To what extent are they applicable to current society problems?
Well, as I said, it's a relative statement anyway, because it has to do with Varnashram system. So it's a glorification, the Brahmana is the best, etc. But then obviously Krishna says that the Vaishnava is even better, so in itself it's a relative statement. And then of course, as Prabhupada pointed out in the Prabhupada, they should be qualified as well. So if they're not qualified by qualities like Sama, Dhamma, etc., then aren't they Brahmanas at all?
That can be for Vaishnavas also.
Yeah, they can be for Brahmanas. But the qualities of the Brahman are sattva-guna. So the qualities of a Vaishnava should be nirguna.
I mean that even Vaishnavas, they think I'm Vaishnavas and they don't follow the rules. It must be their manner as a not
to work. Mm-hmm.
You can't just
act
Vaishnava and keep doing
that. That's true, obviously. But she was simply asking the question in Kali Yuga, what is the, you know, the situation of the Brahmanas? And so that most of them are not qualified by their... I think the Brahmana term is simply Brahmana by birth, basically, and the qualities itself may be questionable.
So,
Well, they get the piety of following the rule, I suppose. But if the Brahmins aren't qualified, then that negates it to some degree. Yeah, well, the process of bhakti itself is nirguna and the Vaishnava accepts that. Now, of course, the problem is they want to have Vaishnavas different levels as well. But in that they're practicing bhakti, the pure bhakti at least, then that is a nirguna thing. At the same time, because they're practicing and whatever and they're not pure, and then they are also subject to gunas at different points in time, faults and whatever may be there. Depending on their level of purity or impurity, whatever. Nevertheless, if we criticize, we should not criticize them as a Vaishnava for those faults. The fault may be there, definitely, due to the gunas, and it may be bad. But we shouldn't criticize them as a Vaishnava, that the Vaishnava has these faults or whatever. We should understand that those are simply aspects of material nature which will disappear with the advancement of bhakti. So we don't hold it against anybody if they have those particular faults or whatever, nor do we consider that as part of being a Vaishnava. We will have to separate the things. At the same time, as I said, the Vaishnava has to distinguish between different types of Vaishnavas for his advancement. That those who were lower and Karnishta, those who are Madhyama, and those who are Uttama. And accordingly, he treats them differently and interacts with them differently. So therefore, we do have to also look at the Vaishnava and see his particular state. And accordingly, we will establish relationships differently with different types of Vaishnavas. So if they got more impurities and more whatever, then obviously we're going to have a different relationship than one who has more purity. So doing that, distinguishing is not considered aparad as such. But we're not taking faults and condemning a person because of the faults. Faults may be there, but we see them as faults that have to be, you know, annihilated through the process of bhakti.
These qualities of
Brahman
which I mentioned, sometimes it is considered that Vaishnavas also should exhibit the same qualities.
Well, people teach like that, but I think it's a misconception. Because if they have the same qualities, then we're stuck in sattva guna. Whatever, of course, it says in Bhagavatam that, you know, the devotee has all the qualities of the devatas, and the devatas are sattva guna, whatever. But then again, ultimately we have to know that the process of bhakti is nirguna, so therefore the qualities that develop in Krishna are not sattva-guna qualities, they're nirguna qualities. So the qualities in the Vaishnava also should be nirguna, not sattva-guna. They may look similar, but actually they're different.
So, No.
Those are sattva qualities. If we establish that, then we're stuck in sattva-guna. We're not Vaishnava. No, the process is the bhakti takes produces all good qualities. So you don't have to cultivate brahminical qualities separately. In fact, that is condemned by Rupa Goswami. It says the cultivation of good qualities is not an anga of bhakti. He says that.
What criteria for identification?
Huh?
Based on spiritual knowledge of the act.
But he follows the process. He has to follow the process properly. And then you go through an Arjuna Vritti, Nishtha, Ruchi, Asakti. So that person should have, as it says, even one who chants the name of the Lord once or remembers the lotus feet of the Lord is into Chandala, then he's superior to the Brahmana. So he must have more qualities than the Brahmana.
Maharaj, did you say that by birth Brahmana, but you don't know the real Brahmana you are? And when you talk of rituals, the Brahmana, you don't know what approach they will come in. While performing such rituals, whether approach will come to the family, you perform the rituals, or only to the performance.
Well, we should try to, if you're going to do those rituals, then you try to find someone qualified, that's all I suppose. That's all the best one could do.
Guru Maharaj, at what point the conditioned soul makes the decision or has the capacity to make the decision to come out of the process of Krishna's material energy?
What?
At what point the conditioned soul makes the decision or is able to make the decision to come out of the process of material
energy? When he gets faith.
But he's not able to come out.
Well, he makes a decision at least. If he doesn't make a decision to get out of the material world, then he's stuck here forever. So when we practice bhakti, then our goal is to serve Krishna purely. So automatically we should try to get out of the material world.
When it comes to the quality, sometimes you know, there's a situation that one has to be more tolerant, or one has to be more this or more that. So, I mean, when we talk about these qualities of bhakti, which means we are more focused on following the process of bhakti rather than focusing on what qualities.
Yeah. See, the qualities that are manifest in the Brahmana are material things, generated by the gunas, sattva gun, which is part of matter. The qualities that develop in the Vaishnava are things that develop by the relationship with Krishna. So therefore it's spiritual. It may look the same, but it's not. You can establish your sama, dhamma, tapa without a relationship with Krishna in the material world. So that's material. So a Vaishnava is attracted to the Lord automatically. Then he has sense control because he's not attracted to material things. So that's a different type of sense control.
So, Maharaj, for example, when we say that one should be tolerant towards another devotee, so the idea is that if the reason why one is tolerant is that he is also Vaishnava, which means it's a transcendental tolerance. Or
yeah.
Towards any other
devotee. Yeah. Well, the vision of the Vaishnava is that we're all servants of Krishna. And one is in sattva guna, when you say, oh, we're all Atma, we're all Brahman, like Gyanis. Therefore, we tolerate everything.
Another connotation to it is like, if the Vaishnava is not exhibiting, like good and bad are both relative. What may appear good to us may not be good for you, but whatever may appear bad for us may not be totally bad. So, and they are duality. So, sometimes we see Vaishnava, like Sri Rangam temple, it was built by like stealing process. So, isn't it that, how do we define quality in bhakti? Like, actually the person in the temple using means that make, by natural means may look bad to us, another thing. So, isn't it that bhakti, the quality may be any either good or bad from our perspective? That is for pleasure of Krishna. How do we understand it?
Well, yeah, the idea is to please the Supreme Lord. And morality is second. So therefore, the gopis are considered the highest devotees, even though they left their husbands, which is morally bad. So that's just an example that morality itself is a relative concept in the material world, and that attraction to Krishna is the highest principle. So that also goes for things like, you know, the thieves and whatever like that. But of course, in the material world, we don't encourage breaking laws or being immoral, whatever, things like that, because on our level, of course, this puts us into the gunas more by becoming attached to material things. So therefore, generally, we don't do that. But one who's very advanced, of course, is beyond all the rules and regulations, and therefore, this one on prema mana cannot judge that person because he may break all the rules of society. Because he has prema for the Lord, and he's not, doesn't understand what's happening in the material world at all. So then we can't judge that person. A person with a lower level, generally, they'll have to be very careful because they're still subject to material world and goodness and whatever like that. So generally, they do follow moral principles, etc., whatever.
Maharaj, Prabhupada writes in Nectar of Instruction that one has to come to the platform of goodness and then the path for the spiritual process is revealed to him. So can we understand that we have to come to the platform of goodness and then
No, that's kind of contrary because, we, as I said, in Bhagavatam it says that the Chandala, who's in Tamagun, he chants the name of the Lord, then he's the spirit of the Brahmana. So he's come to the, let's say, the sattva stage immediately by becoming a Vaishnava. So you don't have to wait until he becomes a Brahmana before he becomes a Vaishnava, obviously not, because then we could never preach in the material world because we have to go through many, many births before we become brahminical. So that won't be proper. So. And therefore, the other idea is that the process of bhakti itself qualifies you for sattva guna, but actually superior to that also. Well, so that's also a relative statement, like the statements here that one has to, you know, honor the Brahman because he's the best person in the material world, etc. It's a statement like that.
And
Vinari
Bhante
got
married to him.
Yeah. Regarding the hunger.
But there's only there, not everything.
No, well, he says that the Bhagavan is the Chandala. He just remembers the Lord's feet, then he's superior to the Brahma.
The Almond, we can say, every who steps in state, the chance of Chandala is more than Brahma. Why do you have all this initiating so many that try to guide him to his? Why do you have the systems there? They say he's serving Krishna.
Well, a person is automatically superior by becoming a Vaishnava, and then we have a whole process of regulating that as a Vaishnava to guide his progress, that's all.
You know, the motive for chanting the holy name can be anything material also. So, irrespective of the motive, you can say that a person who is chanting the holy name is a superior to Brahma.
Well, it depends. If one commits aparada at the same time as chanting, you may not get the right effect. If one has no aparada, then as in the case of Ajamil, he destroyed all of his karmas by chanting, accidentally even. But he didn't have a bad motive also. So one obviously has a bad motive, then it's not going to work. Because that becomes an aparada.
That's why I have to become an aparada, Vaishnava aparada. Does it depend on the other person as how he perceives and he feels that, or it depends on my intention if I intentionally do something wrong? I mean, if the other person perceives as a Vaishnava, if the other person gets.
That's Vaishnava, right?
How directly other people takes it?
Does it depend on how the other person takes it?
That's for Vaishnava, not the other operas.
Yeah, Vaishnava.
Yeah.
Or it depends, like if my intentions are not to offend the other person,
well, that's accidental. It has an effect, but less effect.
What if the other person takes up very deeply?
Then it has effect also. More effect.
The other person is a real Vaishnava, you never even take that into
Generally, they don't. Generally, they don't consider it, but still has effect. Still has effect. But if it's intentional, then it has more effect.
Coming apra itself because he is separated. He is coming apra that leads him to make another apra.
It can, but the main idea there is that one obviously has a material conception of the Vaishnava to begin with, and a lack of understanding and faith in the Supreme Lord because Krishna says that my devotees are very dear to me. So therefore, He doesn't really respect the Lord either.
Grantara Sri Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai 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 Srimad Bh